If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome back to the Explaining History podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to talk about the early moments, the early months of the Spanish Civil War, about Hitler and Mussolini's involvement, and about the kind of character that General Francisco Franco was, and how the rebel generals were able to transport their army from Spanish Morocco onto the mainland and to attack the Republic. This is going to be a kind of a little two-parter, really, because later on, I think either tonight or tomorrow, when I have a moment, I'm going to be talking about war reporting during the Spanish Civil War. And if you've been listening recently, you'll know that war reporting is a particular interest of mine. We've talked about journalism during the First World War, and we're going to return to that theme as well in the near future, but it's an interesting kind of crossover of these two strands. We've done on this podcast in the last couple of months, I think, though time does fly, call it the last year, several podcasts on Spain, particularly Stalin's involvement. Now, previously, I've mentioned Peter Preston's brilliant book, The Spanish Holocaust, and today I'll be looking mainly at Spain in Our Hearts by Adam Hochschild, which is the story of the American volunteers in the Spanish Civil War. The other book that's always worth a read is Unlikely Heroes by Richard Baxall, which I've mentioned several times. It's a great read about the British volunteers to the battalions that made up the International Brigade. Spain was a curious anomaly within Europe. It was a Western European country, Southwestern European country, that was by 1936 a democratic and yet still a largely feudal society. Spain had remained neutral in the First World War, but it had suffered the economic consequences that swept across Europe as a result. And Spain, whilst it had remained neutral in the First World War, was still a deeply violent society. Mainly the violence of the landowners directed at the poor, the landless poor in Spain, were accounted for much of that. And the podcast that I did a while ago about class war in Spain is well worth returning to if you haven't listened to it already, because it sets out much of the background of what I'm going to talk about here. There was, in the decade before the Spanish Civil War, essentially a low-level and at some points a quite pronounced class war between the landowners and the poor landless peasants. The landowners existed in a cartel or a coalition with the Catholic Church, with senior army officers, and monarchist politicians of the right. In 1931, following municipal elections which heavily favoured anti-monarchic parties, King Alfonso left Spain and as a result, a republic was declared that lasted till 1939 when it was overthrown by Franco. And the republic made a dramatic shift to the left in 1936 when the socialists, communists and other parties of the left worked together under a Popular Front. An election on the 16th of February won 263 members of parliament, which outnumbered the 156 right-wing parliamentarians, which were grouped within the National Front coalition, with the Carlists and Monarchists and CEDA. CEDA being the Spanish Confederation of the Autonomous Right, which was an umbrella term for a coalition of Catholic, conservative and proto-fascist organisations that saw themselves really as the bastion, the bulwark of Catholic Christendom in Spain to fight against Bolshevism and against the Jews. Ironically, the Jews had been expelled from Spain en masse in the 15th century by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella in 1492, particularly tragic year for most of humanity, and the idea that the right put forward, and particularly a large number of Catholic extremists, was that the Jews were still influencing Spain and causing trouble amongst the working class and the rural poor, that really the Jews were responsible for the transmission of Marxism and anarchism and other left-wing doctrines to Spain. And this is a delusion that is popular across much of Europe, of course, to associate Jews with communism. The Nazis had made this bogus association, and it had been made as early as 1917 and the Russian Revolution. So happened that many revolutionaries were Jewish, but obviously there were large numbers who weren't. There's an interesting kind of racial subtext to the discourses around the peasants and the left, in that the peasants were often referred to by the landowners as Moors. The peasants were seen as almost a separate and inferior subcategory of human being by many of the landowners. And ironically, when the generals in Spanish Morocco wanted to bulk out their colonial forces, who were largely European Spanish, they hired Moroccan Muslim troops and used a variety of anti-Semitic ideas, anti-Semitic arguments, to suggest that really they would be not only paid for their services, but would be liberating Spain from the Jews. So despite the fact that there were almost no Jews in Spain, anti-Semitism was still a powerful device used by the Spanish generals to help overthrow the Republic. Adam Hochschild has an interesting quote here that's worth examining. He says, "To the coterie of generals leading the new revolt, however, democracy itself was profoundly threatening, and the victory of the Popular Front coalition in the latest election was an anathema. They were convinced that it would lead to a Spanish version of the Russian Revolution. The military rebels called themselves nacionales, a term rather stronger, the historian Paul Preston explains, in its connotations of the only true Spaniards than the usual English rendition of nationalists." So nacionales doesn't mean nationalists in the sense that they are people who are what we call patriotic or xenophobic. They view themselves as the only people who can legitimately be classed as Spanish at all. Therefore, people with anti-Catholic or secularist or anti-monarchical or socialist views are not even part of the nation itself, not even part of the national tribal body. They are in some way foreign to, and this means that Spanishness in the eyes of the generals. It wasn't a kind of a linguistic community, it was an ideological one. General Franco was not the leader of the revolt initially. He was one of the more important plotters, but he was not necessarily a wildly charismatic figure or somebody who was had a particular stature. He was extremely well organised and ruthless. The suggestion from Adam Hochschild is that his small stature, his rather unattractive visage, and his reedy, high-pitched voice meant that he was never going to be the kind of the hail and well-met fellow that perhaps Mussolini was. Instead, he earned a reputation for, and I quote here, cool mastery of detail and iron discipline, even when it meant ordering the disobedient soldiers to be shot. Franco had a reputation for competence and skill and thoroughness. He was the director of the National Military Academy. He was removed. This was an institution that was shut down by the Republic. And the consequences of that are quite significant. Not only were people like Franco sent to the Canary Islands and also to Morocco, where it was thought they would be out of the way and no more trouble. The army itself viewed itself as coming under existential attack, and it viewed itself as really being the guardian of the nation. So the coup was partly aided by the Republic's poor decisions. Sending Franco away simply meant that he had a large amount of leeway to plot and to plan. Most of the coup organisers have a common background in Morocco. They are referred to as the Africanistas. These are veterans of colonial fighting from the 1920s onwards against the Berbers, the mountainous tribes people of Morocco, who had defied and fought off the French in the 19th century and were a very formidable opposition. The experience of fighting for Spain in Morocco and of colonial life in general had created a culture amongst the generals and senior officers that they were the true representatives of what it meant to be Spanish. They were the custodians of Spanish culture and history. They were the avant-garde of...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Spanish civilization, spreading it to lesser peoples in their eyes, in North Africa, and they were determined not to see a lesser culture, as they saw it, emerge back on the Spanish mainland. if you imagine, these were men who had a profound sense of racial superiority over those that they had conquered in Morocco, and they saw something as racially degenerate amongst the Spanish peasants themselves. And the moment that the Spanish peasants have a degree of political power, then the essence of Spain itself, in the eyes of the generals, is about to be swept away. And when the colonial ideas that had been fostered in Morocco, with an immense amount of violence and bloodshed, were transported back to Spain, the colonised people would be themselves the poor Spanish. And part of the horror of the Spanish Civil War, the level of brutality and cruelty that was inflicted on Spanish civilians, can be explained from this fact that a colonising army had returned to the Spanish mainland and were now carrying out the practices that they had come long ago to see as pretty normal. The men of the Army of Africa that was commanded by Franco and his colleagues, which also made up a Spanish Foreign Legion, were often criminals who had managed to avoid jail, who had had their sentences commuted in return for military service. But as mentioned, a large portion of the army were made up of Arab or Berber recruits. And one of the great ironies is that the term Moor, derogatory term to describe Arab and North African people by the generals and Spanish officers, that was also applied to the Spanish poor, was also used as a catch-all term for Muslim soldiers in Franco's army. Franco, who had been seconded to the Canary Islands, was flown by a British aircraft to Morocco to take command of the Army of Africa against the wishes of the Spanish Republic. The Franco's sympathisers in London, along with, so it is suggested in many histories of the era, the help of MI6, who viewed the emergence of the Popular Front in Spain, along with the Popular Front in France, with great alarm, and believed that this was part of a Stalinist plan for the takeover of southern Europe. British security services at least turned a blind eye to the flight that was organised in London, helping Franco to get to Morocco, and so it is suggested actively encouraged it. It was hoped that the Spanish Navy would be the means by which the army could transport itself across the Straits of Gibraltar into Spain, but the Navy were declared for the Republic when there was a naval mutiny. The senior officers in the Navy were killed by their troops, their sailors, and the Navy was removed as a device from the general's control. In sheer desperation, Franco sent envoys to Hitler and to Mussolini. The envoys that reached Hitler got him on a good day. Hitler had been to see a performance of Wagner's Siegfried, his favourite opera, and he received a handwritten letter from Franco describing his situation and asking for help. The conversation that Hitler has with Franco's emissaries, which transpires to be much of a shouting monologue from Hitler, resulted in Hitler finally deciding to agree to give Franco any help he needed. Now, there are a number of possible interpretations for this. Adam Hochschild argues that it was a way of Hitler, who was fed up with what he viewed as the derogatory attitude by Europe's democratic states towards him, of him asserting some kind of power and creating a nightmare situation in Spain for liberal democracy. But Richard J. Evans has an alternate thesis, and it goes something like this, Apologies, Professor Evans, if you're listening and I've not quite got this one absolutely right. That Hitler looked to the Soviet Union and believed that the internationalism of the Soviet Union, Comintern and that sort of thing, was resulting in popular fronts in France and Spain. There is no doubt something in this. A popular front government in France would mean that Stalin would have an ally in Western Europe. If Hitler, and he'd always intended to, attacked the Soviet Union, he would Stalin would have a client state on Hitler's flank. So, when the possibility of another client state, Stalin's client state, emerged in Spain, Hitler thought he would subvert this, thus creating a fascist client state, which would point in the southern flank of France, the Pyrenees, and then create a kind of a stalemate situation, and would eventually lead to the further plans for Operation Barbarossa later on to go unhindered. How much Hitler thinks things through on this level, I'm not sure. My overall view of Hitler's decision-making is that it works within a big framework, but it is entirely impulsive. So the view that Adam Hochschild has isn't inconsistent with that. The way Ian Kershaw talks about Hitler's planning is that he spoke to his colleagues and his subordinates in broad and vague visions, and would sometimes decisively intervene in matters and other times be strangely removed and indifferent. And the chaos that this leads to in Hitler's decision-making sometimes actually drives events forwards. It shouldn't be forgotten that Mussolini actually plays a huge part in helping Franco. Mussolini believes that having a Spanish fascist state would be a huge benefit to himself, and that he would have a client indebted to him in the Mediterranean, which was principally what he sought to be able to control. What transpired from Franco's appeal to Hitler and Mussolini was the first major airlift in history. 15,000 troops were flown to Seville in the course of a few days, and had it not been for the intervention of Hitler and Mussolini at this time, principally Hitler, there's every chance that the general's coup would have been an embarrassing failure. Another power to assist Franco was the dictatorship next door in the guise of Portugal. 8,000 Portuguese troops volunteered in Franco's Foreign Legion. They allowed the port of Lisbon to be used as a resupply base for the generals, and they provided the generals with bases for aircraft, landing fields, and equipped them with munitions when they were running short. The other thing that they handed over were Republican refugees who were universally executed when they were handed over to the nationalist armies. And that fate was shared by countless trade unionists, peasant activists, and even innocent civilians up and down Spain. Terror in Spain during the Spanish Civil War was indiscriminate, and the point was that a political terror in the eyes of Franco had to be indiscriminate. If it was targeted at specific enemies, then the entire nation would not be terrorised into submission. But as long as when rebel troops turned up in particular towns, everybody from the local shopkeepers to school children were executed or mutilated or tortured, then that meant that the terror had a far greater political and ideological impact. To make that point, Adam Hochschild says, if the targeting of those killed made no sense, as in Huesca, for example, where 100 supposed Freemasons were shot in a town where the order boasted less than a dozen members, it hardly mattered. The resulting panic still inspired fear. Spanish Freemasons were in the plotter's sights because they had long been anti-clerical. Such massacres happened everywhere, whether the advancing nationalist forces met resistance or not. "It is necessary to spread terror," declared General Emilio Mola, the coup's initial leader. "We have to create the impression of mastery by eliminating without scruples or hesitation all those who do not think as we do. Anyone who helps or hides a communist or a supporter of the Popular Front will be shot." And in that statement, there's a sort of a snapshot of the merciless nature of modern civil wars, where it is very difficult to simply remain a civilian or a bystander, and where both sides are motivated by these dark and tribal and ideological hatreds, which are utterly uncompromising. Anyway, I'm going to continue, as I said, with this theme on the Spanish Civil War, and we're going to look at war reporting a little bit later. I'll record something tonight. I hope you found it useful, and if you do find these podcasts useful, if you can support us on Patreon, that would be great, or give us a good review on iTunes. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.